You're listening to Face Off, Episode 4, recorded January 31st, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, a technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And Mark Sanborn.
And we're going to talk about technology that's interesting to us and hopefully everyone else. So, all right, Mark, what do we got on the docket today?
For our news section, I've got a Linux font for popular web topography. So,
ooh.
We've got some web apps. We've got Doodle. We've got Snippet and Pastebin.
Awesome.
This one's an old one, but a goodie. We've got some new features in CSS3, some open source security versus closed source,
mm-hmm.
Prepared SQL statements, Adobe Air, blogs and wikis in the workplace, and that's about it.
And that's it. All right, cool. Well, let's get right into this. A little bit of news. This is just cool. It's a list of popular fonts that you can use in Linux. For example, in CSS, you can give generic font families in which the browser and operating system will try to match as close as they can. Or if you have specific ones in mind, you can actually specify the font family.
Mm-hmm.
So you can specify the Windows font family, the Mac font family, and then the Linux font family, and it will actually display the font you want.
Can you actually separate them by operating system? Because you have a detector. And...
No. I mean, their names are different anyway, so you're okay.
True.
But go ahead and give your spiel about it. I'm sorry, I kind of took over there.
The website will be in the show notes, but basically it's an article that shows you the comparison. Like if you're looking for Helvetica or what's another one that's really popular?
Comic Sans.
Comic Sans or Tahoma, you know, some of the ones that are on Windows and Mac, but Linux doesn't have that exact, you know, that font.
I have a coworker that's probably going to kill me for saying Comic Sans. He hates Comic Sans. I mean, I've never seen someone hate a font like that before.
Yeah, I'm not a fan either.
Yeah, it looks goofy, huh? It looks unprofessional, but...
But basically, how I ran into this, I guess, was I went and looked at my website in Opera, and it was just awful.
Awful.
Because Firefox, what it will do is it'll try to use the open source version of Arial or whatever, and it looks nice. But Opera, what it does is it actually comes with its own fonts, mm-hmm. that emulate these.
Oh, so, okay.
It comes with
ugly fonts?
Well, it's not anti-aliased and whatnot, so they're just,
gross.
They just look awful, especially if it's a large font, like for a H1 tag or something.
Mm-hmm.
And my site was primarily for Linux users because it was NixTutor, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not...
But I like about this is it, you know, I think a lot of people, what they would say is, well, if you're on Linux, you're going to be installing MSTT core fonts, right?
Yep. But that's not free, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's not free as in freedom, right? I mean, it's free as in beer, but, and that's okay. But plus, these are core Linux fonts, right? I mean,
they have an image of all of them. I mean, they're almost identical if you look at them, some of them. They're like, you know.
Well, closer than, I mean, especially like the ugly
really
Opera ones, right? I mean, that's.
Yeah, they're awful. And you can turn that off in Opera. You can tell it to not do that. We can put that in the show notes on how to do that. But like for Helvetica on my site looks really nice in Firefox, but in Opera it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
What they've got, if you put Free Sans ahead of it, mm-hmm. in the font family, it'll look nice.
Yeah, because it does. It looks in CSS it goes down the list. So if you look at big websites, they'll do that. They list mm-hmm. all these ones. And then at the end, they say sans serif. They give the generic font family so that it doesn't come out as Times New Roman in the end, right? Because, uh-huh. you know, serif is the default font. You would say, like, you know, if it's Helvetica in Windows, you'd say Helvetica, comma, whatever it is in Mac, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you say, comma, free, what was it? Free sans. Free sans.
For Helvetica.
Free sans, comma, sans serif. Then no matter what, it goes down the line. Your system says, okay, I don't have Helvetica, move on. Okay, I don't have this Mac one, move on. Free sans, oh, okay, I have that, use that. Or if by some chance they have none of them, in the end it says font family, sans serif, okay, use whatever generic sans serif font I have that I'm supposed to use.
See, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure if Opera, if you were to put Free Sans after Helvetica, mm-hmm. in the font family, I'm not sure if
that's
Opera
a good question.
Would try to, you know, emulate Helvetica. Mm-hmm. I think it would first. So if you've got a site that's primarily Linux and you might have Opera users, I would put the Linux one ahead of the Windows ones.
Yeah. And there's all kinds of good looking fonts on there.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, it's comparisons for the popular ones. Yeah, so
we'll put links in the show notes.
What else was I going to say about this one? Now, it's a great article. I give the author, I mean, mad props. They've done a good job at making images and stuff.
Definitely.
The funny thing I found ironic is I viewed the site in Opera, naturally, because I was doing a search on Opera, because Opera looked terrible when I was testing my website.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is they don't do it.
Really?
Yeah. They just use Helvetica. It looks terrible. Their site looks terrible. That's in funny. Opera. So I thought it was funny. But their article's great, and give them
you should for that. You should comment about should. That in a positive and yet
I should, I'm gonna
you know helpful that. Fashion. Okay. Cool. Very cool. Good find, Mark. Good find.
All right. So we're going
to. All right. Let's move on to some web apps, right?
Web apps.
The first one I want to talk about is this little web app called Doodle. Now, I don't know about it. Depends on organizations and where you work. But where I work, there is a big push to use Microsoft Outlook and Exchange service. And I understand why. I mean, I understand I'm not going to get into this big fight about it. But a good majority of us where I personally work prefer Gmail or in Google Calendar, right? I like Google's tools. I think they're much better. So one of the big problems is with scheduling a meeting, right? Because they're like, well, okay, I'm in Outlook and I'm going to go look at Jade Robinson's calendar. What? Oh, he doesn't have anything in his calendar, or better, he doesn't even have an Exchange account. What the hell? Blah, blah. And, you know, and I'm in Gmail or Google Calendar, and like I had my friend, you know, Mark Sanborn share his calendar with me. I can overlay his calendar. But what about my friend, you know?
That's using Exchange.
He's using Exchange. Well, what Doodle does is it is a web application where you can schedule a meeting based on when people can come. So what you do is I go in there and I say I'm going to make a new meeting, and I say what times I'm available. The general times this meeting is available, right? So like, you know, 9 to 10 Monday, 1 to 2 Monday, you know, 4 to 5 Wednesday, and then send that out to all the attendees, right? So what they do is they get in their email, they get a little link that says go here, and they go there and they just select what times they can go, what times work for them.
Okay.
So let's say all three of the times work for me. I would check all three times and hit submit. Let's say you go on there and the 9 to 10 and 1 to 2 on Monday work for you, but the Wednesday time doesn't. So you would only check the 9. And so then as the person who's organizing a meeting, I can go on there and I go on and I see what times work for everybody, so then I can then schedule the meeting without being like, because most people, if they have Exchange, immediately they default to using the meeting scheduler. And if one person doesn't have it, that model falls apart. Or if you have multiple systems. So like where I work, everyone in the main office uses Exchange. So what they do is everyone who has an Exchange calendar, they find the times that work for those people using the meeting scheduler. And then you can send a doodle off to those of us that don't. And then we can tell you then what times work for us without having that cross-system integration, which will never, ever exist. I mean, maybe if Google does it, but, you know. So it's a way to say, basically, to send to everyone and say, what of these times work for you? And they say, okay. So then I go on and I say, okay, well, you know what? 90% of the people said that this time works, so I'm going to schedule the meeting at that time. That one person can't. I'm sorry. But everyone else said that time works. They're right. Open. It's really handy and really cool, and it's so simple. I mean, it's the simplest web application I think I've ever seen. You basically create something. It's basically a poll, you know, with multiple answers that you can use.
Does it do text?
It's all text.
No, a text message.
No. Oh. Well, I mean, it's email. You just tell it what emails to put in.
It emails it out.
Yeah, emails the link out. And it's really simple. It's kind of cool. I mean, you might say it's bad, but it requires no login, nothing. It's really, because what I'll find, I'm safe in saying this, people I know that use Exchange are really picky, right? They get really militant about it. And so, like, if you have to, like, log in for this system, they'll just be like, well, you know, you should be using Exchange.
Yeah.
But this is really easy. You just click on the link, click what times work for you, and hit submit. It's really low impact, and it's great for them.
Yeah, I know at the university I used to work for, they used Exchange for everything, to schedule everything. The whole university does.
And, exactly.
Introducing something like this, I don't think it would fly over. Well, with them. I mean, it's good.
But that's the thing. It doesn't have to. So if I'm organizing a meeting, and we just have to tell people to be tolerant about it. You don't, you know, it's a good way for both people to use it that's low impact, right? I'm sorry, you can't go look at my Exchange calendar because I don't keep track of my calendar in Exchange. But this is a quick, simple workaround for it. So it's really useful, and conceptually, it amazes me that they thought of this and how simple it is.
Huh.
And how useful it is.
So, okay.
So that's Doodle.
Do they monetize? Do they have a monetization somehow?
Or I just it, ads.
Just ads, ads on the site.
Yep. I mean, that's all.
And that's only when you're really creating a Doodle, right?
Creating it when you go to it, too. I mean, when you go to fill out your stuff, they can put an ad on there. Okay. Right.
Yeah, you're right.
Either way, it's eyes.
So when they click on the email link, then it goes in there. And then
yeah. And it's like the perfect web application because it's really low maintenance and it will, I mean, you can put ads on eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this thing probably took 2 days to develop. It's amazing. I really wish I would have thought of it. Very clever.
Was it developed in Rails then?
I have no idea. Maybe.
Rapid prototype.
Okay. So our next little web application that we want to talk about is Snipped. And it's at snipped.net, SNIPT.net. Now, Snipped is really cool because it's a place for you to store little bits of code that you use all the time. Right, so there's little things. We talk about this all the time. You can never remember like the MySQL syntax for various things, you know. And so what you can do is you sign up with Snipped, and then you just put those little bits of code you use all the time. So they say Snipped is good for storing small pieces of code or commands that you use rather frequently and will probably forget.
Yep.
Right, and we all have those. So let me log in here with my Snipped account.
Yeah, I'm constantly I use my blog. I constantly search. I have used this too, and it's nice because you can search by language. Like, let's say you're doing bash commands or something, mm-hmm. You forget how to, I don't know, mount something or whatever.
Yeah, and so like they have public snips, right? And you can see like certain things that people are doing, right? So here's a Linux command snip that's like sudo slash user bin slash lsoft dash I tcp colon port kill minus 9 pid.
There you go.
Right? I mean, that's start a network in Linux, right? It said init.d network start. It's like, that's so, I mean, there's just all kinds of little things. Oh, here's like a big one, a simple button script. I think JavaScript.
Or you're looking in public snips?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's hilarious. And if it knows what color it is, it tries to do, you know, syntax highlighting for it. But it's pretty cool. Because, I mean, yeah, like I forget it, or you use a blog, right? And a blog seems a pretty heavy-handed solution for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
first of all, it's got to be post-worthy. You're not gonna.
Well, that's yeah, or private, which means you have to make sure you're logged into your blog to get to it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like for instance, one of mine it's echo date with a capital Y, which is just the year, the current mm-hmm. year in 19 form, you know, four-digit format.
Four-digit format, yep,
and. I'm not going to write a blog post on that. Hey, here's how you do a four-digit, you know, in PHP, because that's useless. But,
yeah.
But, like, yeah, so that I could, yeah, that's good.
And it's tagged. It's not, like, heavily categorized. It's tagged, right? So, I mean, like, look at the top 40 public tags are Bash, PHP, MySQL, CSS, Linux, Python, Ruby, Unix, PS, JavaScript, Server, SVN, HTML, Find, Plugins, jQuery, Socials. I mean, it's awesome,
Can you search by code, like, show me all my PHP stuff, or is it just kind of a search keyword?
Well, you tag it, tags. Oh, you tags. Tag that way. And I think through its tags, it figures out what language it is.
On the right, we've got tags.
Yeah. Very cool. Great little thing for you guys to just keep your stuff in. And then if you want, you can like make it public, you know, so it's like, oh, man, you know. Oh, no, yeah, you select the language it is when you put the snipped in. Oh, my God, they have mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff. ActionScript, Apache Conf, AppleScript, BBCode, C.
Yeah, like pretty much everything.
More C than I would like to think about. Debian source, that's cool. Very cool. And you can
and
public,
you can,
and other people can be like, I mean, if you're a bored programmer, you can go browse snips, see what little things people are using. And
now, do you know if you can send a private link to somebody with that? Like, let's say it's private, but somebody's like, hey, do you know how to do this? You can kind of give them a link to it.
No, that's really gonna be the next thing we're going to be talking about. So,
all right.
But yeah,
I guess you could copy and paste in the next program. Exactly. We're gonna talk about.
So let's get into it. The next program we're going to talk about is Pastebin.
Pastebin.
Yeah. Now, Mark, you've used Pastebin much more than I have.
Man, Pastebin has been out longer than all these combined, probably.
Really? See, I had never even heard of it until about a couple months ago when you told me about it. Yep.
The first time I've used Pastebin was in an IRC channel because they don't allow large chunks of code. You can imagine what kind of problems that would cause. You're trying to chat with somebody and all of a sudden 200 lines of chat scrolls by, right?
Text.
I think that is one of the primary reasons for Pastebin, or how it first got started, is you're in IRC and you're like, how do I do this Linux command or whatever? And they're like, oh, you got to do this, and they like send you a link. Or it's like, you know, my hard drives aren't mounting properly or something, and they're like, well, you know, put your fstab.
That happens a lot where it's like, hey, I need help, and it's like, well, show us your code.
Exactly.
You know,
either code or a config file. Or
yeah, exactly, because you don't want to have to sit and talk about it. Yeah.
And so what Pastebin does is you can put your code up there and give a tiny URL, a small link to somebody else, pastebin/some code. And you can give that to your friend or whoever's helping you or whoever you're showing your code to. And they can come in there, they can look at it, they can even modify it and send you back a link or whatever. And so that's nice. And it's got syntax highlighting for tons of stuff, C, C++, HTML. Pretty much everything you'd need. If it doesn't, you know, not a big deal. Now, and there's different ways to get your code in here. You can obviously copy and paste it if you're in a GUI. If you're doing any command line and stuff, I recommend Pastebin it. You can literally cat it out
no
to
way.
Pastebin it, and it'll automatically put it out there and then give you a link back.
No way.
So, like, if you're like, if somebody's like, you know, what's in your fstab? I need to check it out. You can go. Pastebin, pipe it to Pastebin.
Pipe it, and that's very cool.
So cat the file and then pipe it.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't want to have to open it up and select it all and copy and paste.
Vim is or whatever text editor you use, kind of on a console, it's kind of hard to, you know, grab certain parts and then open a web browser up and so. So that's nice to do it that way.
And I guess since it's been around so long, it really has some staying power, and there's a lot of tools written for it out there.
Yeah,
right.
Yep.
Very cool. All right. So those are our web apps. Web apps. Web apps are fun. Here's a problem I have with web apps is that when trying new ones, it's really hard if you want to pick your pony. So it was, right?
Right. That's kind of one of my resistances to trying new things.
That's why you don't use them a lot, right? I mean, like a lot of them that we talked about in the previous episode, if you get them and you integrate them sort of into your own personal workflow and then they go out of business. I mean, we're in the middle of a recession right now, so that's a high probability that some of these little startups that you've been hoping, you know, will get along there might die. That's tough.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's why it's something like Pastebin is nice because it's been around for a while. It has staying power, you know? I mean, I'd hate to like tell all my coworkers, like, man, use Doodle, use Snippet, and then next week they go out of business, it's gone, right?
Mm-hmm. One thing I have to mention about Pastebin is I believe everything is public, and you have no choice of private.
Yeah, so make sure you're not.
So make sure you're not
putting a comp file with your MySQL host name and password and all that stuff in it.
Just a disclaimer, but yeah, that's one of my main resistances to trying out new things, especially web apps, is. Okay, so Twitter, you know, the different ones.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want 10 of them, you know.
Yeah.
I want one. I'd like to try the different, you know, which one's the best and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why, I mean, for the longest time, I resisted Twitter and I used Jaiku because Jaiku had it has a better interface.
But the community's smaller, so.
Oh, it's got a tiny community, right? So, like, the second I finally gave in, I think it was because of you, and I said, finally, okay, I'll use Twitter. Right, I was like trying to be open-minded and say, hey, I'm going to do this microblogging thing, and I figured they're going to fight for a while, and then there'll only be one, but I honestly now see the trend going a different way. But the reason to join Twitter is everyone on Twitter, because everyone's on Twitter, right? It's like this giant conversation of like celebrities and nerds and just average people, and that's what makes it exciting.
Yeah. It's just micromanaging, you know, if you have to do different updates. I guess you have services like ping.fm and things to help you with that, but...
Yeah.
I don't want to have to do a bunch of different status updates to different ones. And that's, I guess, my resistance to some of these ones, even though I need to keep an open mind.
Yeah, but then at the same time, though, it's like, what if you find that one that, I mean, we're all different, right?
Right.
Twitter's cool and stuff, but what if you find that one you really, really like, and yeah. then they shut down?
Yeah.
Like, that's heart-wrenching. I don't know. Because, well, I'm so much a creature of habit, it's disgusting. So when I pick something, it's like, that's my thing, right? And that's what I stick to it, right? And then if it, like, shuts down and I can't use it anymore, I'm devastated for like a week because I don't know what to do.
Do you like, have any services that have shut down on you?
Oh yeah, Stick it.
It
was this awesome thing where it was like a post-it notes, but it was really smart about parsing it.
Yeah, I think we talked about that.
Did we? Yeah. And like it shut down.
Like a personal secretary, right?
No, that was I Want Sandy.
Oh,
same company.
Sorry.
But yeah, same thing though. It's like you get used to it, and like I used to keep all my podcast notes on Stick It. Because you could share them with people and stuff, and then like it shut down, and I'm lost. We're like using Google Docs now for our, and that is bugging the hell out of me. It's just it, I just need to be more flexible in general in my life, but still, I don't. That bugs me.
How do you usually find web apps? Is it usually a social network like a dig or something where you're like, here's one or
that's a tough.
To me,
one.
It's usually you. You're like, try these things out because I'm usually like I'll hear about them. You know, I'll hear people talking about them a little bit, and I'm just like, I don't. You know.
My coworkers are a big help. They find some of them. Other podcasts like Leo Laporte does Net at Night with Amber MacArthur. And I honestly have no clue how that woman hears about all the things she does because she like take our little web app section of this show and multiply it times 1,000 and she does that once a week.
Wow.
And I mean, this was to the point of I was like, well, what other things am I using that we can talk about? You know, I don't know where she gets all this and she uses it all. It's redonkulous.
Wow.
I don't know how that works though.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wish I knew about more of them. I wish I was sort of more in tune to the scene, I guess. I mean, compared to other people in Montana and stuff, I'm like, you know, in the deep end way in there. But I mean,
with RSS I wish feeds I had and more. Things, you're not with RSS feeds, I guess you could find links and things.
Yeah. Like Lifehacker's a really good one. Like Lifehacker always has really good kind of like new tools that are coming out, but I don't know. I wish I had more. It's not as sick as it sounds. I wish I had more because I want to find that stuff because I am. I really love the perfect thing. Like when I find that perfect thing, I'm really happy. Mm-hmm. So I want to find it. I want to use it, you know, and it's perfect for me and I'm happy. But the only problem is usually when I find the perfect thing, no one else likes it. Jaiku, Stick It. I mean, I shared notes with people on Stick It and they're like, Stick It, I'm not gonna sign up for this crap. And I was like, no, but it's so cool. And like
it's like MindMeister. When you first linked that to me, I actually looked at the website for like 2 minutes and I just like, oh, just
like,
another web app.
Like, screw that. Yep.
And then once I actually finally used it for some brainstorming, I actually liked it because it's so fast. You don't have an idea and is a little bit slower. It's got its purpose, you know.
Oh, of course, yeah.
It's not really for brain scanning.
No. I tried
mind mapping, I guess.
I tried to use MindMeister this last weekend when we had some meetings and stuff, and
did it help out.
It did. It has some kinks it needs to work out, right? So it almost worked perfectly because we were doing this diagram up on a whiteboard, right? And one of the things was like things were linking to certain things, you know. And in MindMeister, you can do the arrow thing, but if you do like more than one arrow at all, it gets so effing cluttered.
Yeah.
It does not work. And so I was like, oh, because like I did arrow, and I was like, I have no clue what this is even saying because the arrows just kind of get right intertwined with each other and you have no clue what's happening. But it was cool. I don't know. My problem with things like that and mind mapping is I'm so particular about things that if they're not perfect, I spend more time getting them perfect than I do actually just like getting information out there. Like, I can't organize it later. It bugs me to organize it later. I want to organize it as I'm doing it or have a system thought out ahead of time. And so if I don't, I'm always like, like when I was doing this one, like I started doing the whole mind map as like user interface ideas. And then halfway through, I was like, well, no, there's different like user levels too. So maybe I should just do a mind map about the whole project itself. And so like the category one was like user interface and the category two was like user categories. And then I was like, trying to do each one, and like I spent more time organizing after like I did it one way. I was like, oh, I need to split these up and move this here and move that there. That it really, I'm not sure if it really helped me in the end.
Huh. It's a good web app, anyways.
Yeah, well, I mean, it works for some people. Sure. I know I'm not the average person because I'm really anal about stuff. So,
all right, do you have any other web apps?
Oh, not any that I can think of tonight.
All right. CSS3. I'm not sure when it's coming out, but it's coming out sometime soon. It's the next, you know, thing.
Well, soon in the world of web standards means
it's actually a long time.
Probably like 10 years.
Well, not only will it take a while for it to come out, it's going to take even longer for all the web browsers. Well, for all the people to get their web browsers updated.
Yeah, well, here, about this. How about this? On a related note, I read a news story last week that in Internet Explorer 8, Microsoft will finally have full support for CSS 2.1.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
What is it? Firefox, well, they already have CSS 3 in them.
Yeah. They're already sort of, you know, beta testing CSS 3 stuff.
It's going to put them
so, I mean, CSS 3 is coming out soon in 15 years, right?
All right, so there's some new things coming in CSS 3. One of my things that I think is kind of cool is you can import fonts.
Very useful.
A small file. They're only a couple K. They're not.
Yeah, TTF files are pretty tiny, small. Tiny.
I see a lot of websites using images for certain fonts.
Well, that's all. I mean, that's why, right?
Because you can't.
Unless an image is like a picture or a logo.
Because not everybody has the fonts.
You
right?
just use it so that you can embed the font,
like,
basically.
Like, mint.com, all their headers are a certain. It's an image. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that font, that's the font they choose, and it looks good.
Yeah.
But they can't count on every computer to have that exact font. And it's probably, you know, they probably paid money for that font and everything else.
Typography is exploding right now.
I guess that brings another point is, can you. If it's a paid font, can you put it on your site, and other people are downloading it?
Ooh, that's a good like business question, right? Like, how do you do that? Like, are you gonna have to like cut a check to the font maker for, you know, X number of downloads?
I don't know.
That's crazy. There has to be like some encryption or something, because then if you download it, you can use it. You have that TTF file.
Yeah,
you can.
Then now you have that font.
Ooh,
so I don't know how they're
that's
going to
that be
off.
Dirty.
But like for websites, you know how they have the font family. Well, this would kind of get rid of that and say use this font, Arial or whatever.
I mean, if you import it in your, I mean, you'll probably keep it in there for legacy browsers.
Yeah, of course, because it's going to take.
We'll still be supporting Internet Explorer 6 in 10 years. I freaking swear it. I would not put it past the world.
I might be misunderstanding this font feature, but that's the way I look at it is you can actually have a TTF or an open type
nice.
Font.
Very cool.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it could be cool.
My favorite CSS3 features is going to be the graphical features, like rounded corners,
drop
shadows. I mean, it's good to see that CSS3 is focusing on cutting down the amount of work that we have to do to hack around crap.
And the bandwidth.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
It's not a whole lot, but it's a little bit.
Yeah, but it's still annoying that I have to like make an image for every round corner I want to do.
Yeah, that it's tedious. It's,
right? And you're like, okay, I got my two things, and then sometimes your font color doesn't quite match up with your browser's embedded color, so you.
Yeah. It's making things a little bit more standardized too. Putting rounded corners, you got to put them in the background and rotate them, and. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has their own method to do the rounded corners because there's not just one way to do it.
Exactly. So, and like some people are like, oh, I love the JavaScript ones. And if you look at them, they look ugly. You're like, oh, I can tell that's JavaScript.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like anti. It's like it's not very smooth.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like they take the whole top and they're like, this div 70%, and then they put one right below it. And they're like, that div 71%. And it looks terrible. I don't know.
But in a pinch, it's not bad.
What else do you think about CSS 3 is interesting you?
What else is there?
I can't think of anything. I should know this. We should know this. I know, right? Too. Yeah.
There's shadows, drop shadows.
Well, yeah. They
put that stuff on everything.
That's so cool. I mean, it'll change the way things roll. I think I'm really excited about it.
CSS 3.
I also think it's good that it's finally, I mean, CSS has really changed. It's like most things, people resisted it. I mean, I remember making the decision one day to be like, all right, well, I'm going to not use tables for my design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it was a big deal.
That'll probably be some nice stuff with CSS 3, is they'll get rid of some of the stuff that, mm-hmm. Well, you obviously still need tables for certain things.
Mm-hmm. Well, tabulated data. Right. That's what it's for, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's good to see that people are actually waiting for it. It's not, it seemed like in the past CSS was emulating the features of tables, like allowing you to do things without tables that you did in the past with tables. And now it seems like CSS is saying like, okay, well, we're recognizing what people are doing. Let's make it easier for them to do that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the content is shaping.
And it's outdated. I mean, there's some new stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Like pink transparency in IE or whatever, you know,
yeah,
there's
exactly.
New technologies coming out. So
yeah. Very cool.
I wish we knew a little bit more about CSS to
I know,
tell
I know. Of,
so,
but those are the big things.
Those are my
simple
that's my
web developer. Those things that we just mentioned are what I'm really excited about.
Right.
Right. Anything else that I haven't cared enough to look up or hear about? I mean, I can take it or leave it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally.
I remember reading the list of cool features that are coming, and the font ones stood out to me, and the rounding
alpha transparency, opacity.
And I think
super pumped about
SVG
that.
SVG and vector images, I think, are coming to where it's native, you know.
That wouldn't be a CSS 3 thing, though. That would just be a browser standard thing.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Opacity, though. Div opacity, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
I actually use that right now.
I know.
The Moz thing.
Me too.
Nice.
Don't tell anybody. If you look at my site, Internet Explorer, you're like, wow, that's a lot of squares. And if you look in like Firefox, you're like, ooh, that's some beautiful rounded corners. Terrible. Moving on. Let's talk about prepared SQL statements.
All right.
Because this is interesting. I've never even heard of these.
I haven't heard of it until I watched. I have to give them props because this is where I found it. It was a NetToots. it was a video.
Screencast.
There you go. And I was just watching through it, and I was skimming through it and skipping mm-hmm. around, and here's these prepared statements. He was doing a login form. Basically what it is you prepare the statement ahead of time. If you're going to do iterations, multiple mm-hmm. queries using the, let's say you're going to select, the username and to see if a user's logged in each mm-hmm. page. If not, then don't show that page.
Okay? Yeah.
Something that you're going to use for throughout the whole the site for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the MySQL cache, I guess. It's sitting there. It's predefined, you know, prepared, is sitting there and waiting mm-hmm. for just that input variable.
Okay.
So it's much faster. It's a little bit more, I mean, I guess a lot more secure, meaning it can't really be changed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say they try to inject something into it. It's already been prepared.
It's there. It's the rest of the query is there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you can only put whatever's the question mark.
Cool.
In the syntax. So.
Hmm.
Anything else?
Is it? I mean, if I have like pure client access, I guess. I mean, how easy is this to use? Are hosts like in general not cool with this? Or I mean, because if you have something sitting in memory, why wouldn't I just make all my SQL statements, prepared statements, and just have them sit there in memory all day?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, you could potentially run out of memory in the deal.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean,
you could make
every SQL statement you use, you can make.
The reason why you wouldn't is it actually is slower. There's certain times where you wouldn't use it because it actually has to go through it twice. It sets it up first.
Oh.
Then it has to go back through and send the variable that you're putting it in.
Mm-hmm.
Say you're looking for username with this username.
Yeah.
Okay. So you set the query up. So that's the first set of instructions. Mm-hmm. Then you have to go back through and do the variable. So it's actually slower the first time around. But as you go through your code, let's say you check something 10 times on one page,
mm-hmm.
the same thing but different variables.
Yep.
It's going to be way faster for that.
Okay.
So it's not to your advantage really to use it on everything.
Okay.
And that's why I guess that they're so, but I'm not sure. Maybe I think different hosts might limit how much memory you can use on MySQL.
Mm-hmm.
So that would kind of, I guess, take care of that. I don't know,
like, how much memory one of these uses. I don't know. That's a good question.
So, but good. I just learned about them, so.
Cool. Well, good find. All right. So let's move on. Moving on up. What do we got? We got
Adobe Air?
Yeah, let's talk about Adobe Air. So, what is Adobe Air?
The way I understand it is it's providing more extensions or extensibility, more function features to basic web browsing. So, like, if you want to make more of a full-featured program that goes over the web, I guess,
mm-hmm.
Adobe's got a Adobe Air. It's desktop applications for the web, I guess, kind of.
Yeah, as I understand it, it basically takes Flash applications out of the browser and puts them on your desktop.
So to speak.
Like, but more full-featured.
It's not in Flash. A browser anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
It is the program.
Yeah, it's a program. So, like, where I saw it was a Twitter application.
Uh-huh.
It put, like, the tweets on the side, on the desktop. Of course, anything with Adobe and, like, sort of Flash is gorgeous, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was, like, nice reflections, translucency and stuff. And it had my tweets kind of just scrolling on the side.
And things can be faster because you can use local resources. You can store data on the hard drive and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. You
wouldn't really have with the regular web stuff.
Yeah.
But I guess it provides...
integrates with the web really well.
Uh-huh.
Like, I know what I saw that used it was, like, Pounce used it for a while. So, mm-hmm. like, you could have a desktop application.
eBay's got an app. Google Analytics has one.
No. Yeah,
but it's not done... It's not from Google.
No.
I think it's third party. Mm-hmm. And you put your username and password in.
Yeah.
I think. I'm pretty sure. When I looked at it.
Still very cool. Like, I just would love to have that.
My first thought with it is it's like ActiveX or something. Is this bringing security problems? I mean, is my grandma or whoever going to click on install this app and it's going to be some malware? Because you could potentially do something with it like that.
Potentially, yeah. I think you're dead on about that.
You know, we've gone through this before with the ActiveX stuff.
Yeah,
it was all malware after a while.
You're malware. But yeah, you know, it's one of those things that I don't know. The web is becoming more and more ubiquitous every day. We integrate with our lives more and more, and this seems like a good halfway stepping point, right?
It's definitely good technology.
Yeah,
I'm just hoping that the bad guys don't get a hold of it,
And once again, their Linux version of it is behind everyone else,
of course.
I just want to use my Nix, man.
Yeah.
It's buggy.
They're just now getting Flash working perfectly in Linux.
Well, yeah, perfectly is
not so
glorious
perfect.
Overstatement for them, yeah. Not impressed. But anyways, I think it's going to gain steam, and I think we're going to see a lot more of it.
Now, do you know Google Gears? Is this something like that or not really?
Not that I... As far as I know, Google Gears is... and I'm going to get corrected on this because I don't think I'm right, but I think it was just a data storage synchronization engine, you know?
So you can cache things.
Yeah.
Kind of like this, but not quite.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I know WordPress now has Gears integration. So if you turn Gears on, it caches locally a lot of the common, like, JavaScript files and stuff that it uses. So you don't have to get them. If you enable Gears with, like, Gmail, you can do email offline now, right? So through Gears, it's like, oh, you send an email while you're offline, I'll send it now, and now here's your new email, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it caches those local web files. Gears is specifically, I believe, supposed to be for the web, whereas Air is not, right? I think I could make a game in Air that does not even need the internet at all. I'm not sure. We should look into that for next show.
Okay. I wanted to mention there's an open source competitor to Adobe's Air.
What is it?
It's called Titanium.
Hmm.
I'm looking for the link here. But it's well, they're going to focus on Linux probably first. That's good. Maybe not.
You know what I hope they do? It's kind of the, do you remember, oh, who was it? It was like Mac and what was the widget thing for Linux before Yahoo bought it? Now it's the Yahoo widget engine, but before it was like Conquest or something like that. Anyways, what they did is they were like, well, everyone's using these Apple widgets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just make them compatible, right? So you could open Apple widgets. Like, I mean, it causes problems because then you'd spend time kind of like wine, you know, playing catch up all the time to a retail product.
Yeah.
But it would be nice to use Air programs in Titanium.
True.
And it would give them the edge, I think.
Might be hard to do with it since Adobe is proprietary.
Well,
which,
but so is Apple's thing, right? I thought.
Now, do you know if Adobe Air programs, do they have to go through the Adobe Marketplace? Or is it something you can make your own or whatever?
Yep. You can make your own.
Because the only apps that I ever saw for it were through that marketplace. Even if
no,
free.
Like the Twitter one I saw, it was just on a regular web page.
Was it?
When it's okay. Yeah, it was like in beta too. So,
because that could be one way to limit the security risk is to have everything approved, but also at the same time it hinders what people can do because it has to go through them and all that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like the iPhone apps. Well, those you have to pay to develop.
Yeah, what is up with that? Why would they do that? I don't know. Anyways,
we'll put the Titanium link in the show notes when we find
it. Yeah, check it out, because I want to take a look at it, too.
But it's basically the open source version of Adobe Air.
Good.
It's
I like open source in its early stages.
Hmm.
So is Air, though.
True.
I mean, they could get a leg up on Air if they tried.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's one of those things I think it uses basically the same interface to program for it as Flash. So it'll probably gain more steam because, you know, there's a lot more Flash programmers out there than whatever Titanium uses programmers.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Is Titanium pretty? That's why Air is good, because it's pretty. It sounds bad, but, I mean, the pretty girl gets asked to the prom, dude, right? I mean, without a doubt. It's all right. Let's switch it up. All right. So, blogs and wikis in the workplace. I don't even know where to start with this topic.
How about getting people to use them, I guess? It's not too...
I haven't solved that problem.
it's free, usually. Well,
blogs in the workplace.
Wikis. Well, yeah. Blogs and wikis, it's free, right? So I guess it doesn't take much to convince your boss or whoever to try them out.
It does, though. It does.
Well, there's not very much risk. It's free. It's...
Yeah, but see, there. Well, the thing with blogs, wikis are easier to sell than blogs because you say, hey, it's a wiki. We're going to put all our useful information on it. It's easy to access, right? Wikipedia is a useful tool. People use it all the time for information. It's good, right? That's easy to sell. Blogs?
But even wikis, how do you get the users to keep on using it? They might see it
difficult.
First, and they're like, "Ah,
that's fine. That's difficult. That's all. We'll hit that later." But okay, blogs are the hardest thing to sell in the world. You know why? Because popular media has blogs completely wrong. Mm-hmm. So everyone hears either the political blogosphere, which for some reason they assume that there's like this group called Blogosphere, and that's what it like. They think that Blogosphere is like a media outlet, or they think about their son ranting about girls on MySpace.
Well, web blog, I mean, it's like a diary, right? Is what they think that what it used to, well when it first started,
most people don't even know what blog means. They don't know it means web blog. They think blog. They think of Billy and Sally talking about kids at school. It sounds completely unprofessional at first to most people because they think blogs. They think, you know, Blogspot and Facebook Notes and stuff like that, and it's just not that at all.
But like Google's got a blog. The WhiteHouse.gov has a blog.
Yeah, right. And that helps convince people. But if you don't tell them that at first, yeah, exactly. And the other thing that people think of when they hear blogs, especially when you associate them with wikis, is that anybody can do anything they want, and that scares the hell out of people.
Yeah, I don't want my employees talking about this or that or
yeah. Any of my employees can post up there that they, you know, they think so that this other company is full of poop or, you know, and I don't want that. I don't want to be responsible for that. Like, for some reason, employees can't verbally get that out somehow. Anyways, right?
But I have to believe that Google's blog, they edit and they review and they approve of those blog posts that are going out. I don't think anybody just
exactly
write it
and that's
submit.
The most people don't. They assume that blog means anybody can write anything, right?
Even comments are moderated.
So I work at Montana State University, right? And so one of the things we did is we set up a WordPress MU system. And
what's MU? Just so
it's
MU.
Just basically it's WordPress but for multiple blogs. It's the system that runs WordPress.com.
Okay,
their blogging system. So, and the thing what we wanted is a blogging platform for Montana State University faculty and staff, not students, right?
Would this be private or public?
Public.
Okay.
Because what you realize is a blog is nothing more than a press release system as a company.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's just got that buzzword attached to it as well.
Exactly, right? So, like, we're trying to tell people, well, anybody can say anything. And it's like, yeah, but I'm an employee, and I can go out in the mall and yell whatever the heck I want, right? I can go out in the middle of the campus of Montana State University and yell about how stupid Montana State University is, right? And what happens? I get in trouble. There are real-world consequences for what I said, right?
Mm-hmm.
The exact same thing goes for a blog, and they have the hardest time understanding that. They're like, what if we give a professor a blog and he goes on and rants about how he hates personal payroll? Well, I was like, well, what would happen if he went and did that in a public, in any public forum?
You're gonna know about it.
Yeah. I mean, at least here, his name is attached to it in an electronic and backed up format, right? He can go say something in public and deny it. And unless you have an audio recording of it, there's nothing you can do. This is like recorded, but people immediately freak out. They think anybody can say anything. They assume anybody can comment on anything. They don't think about the fact that it's a controlled system, a computer system that's programmed by people that you can make do what you want, right? So, I mean, I was like talking, I work for a group that does sort of, you know, system administration on a contract basis around campus. And I was like, why are we not blogging about this? They're like, we'll email all our customers when we have downtime. And I was like, why are we not blogging about this? Why don't we just say, you know, for information or announcements regarding our service, go to this website and then say, hey, there can be downtime, you know.
And you also, you know, you've got comments. People can leave comments and you can.
Yeah.
You're communicating with your people more.
Exactly. And yeah, it's just so funny that, I mean, the word blog in corporate America's head sends out spines and shivers because it's just completely wrong. They have no idea what it means. They think personal blogs where people can say things anonymously and do whatever they want.
Yeah, I even have friends that think it's a diary online.
Yeah, exactly, right? And I mean it's nothing more than information displayed reverse chronologically. So the newest thing is up top. That's mm-hmm. all it is. The information is whatever you want it to be, right?
And you typically have feedback of some sort. Because that's yeah. Web 2.0.
Right. I mean, yeah. But, like, I mean, in essence, all you have to have for a blog is information that is sort of made on a date in reverse chronological order. That's all it is. The information is what you want it to be. It doesn't have to be a diary. It can be talking about your service. I mean, Google is one of the most forward-thinking companies in the world. They've used blogs perfectly. They even encourage their employees to create personal work blogs that sort of give back to the community, right? It's not just like, you know, certain Google blogs make announcements. We released new version X of this. You can now, you know, do email offline and Gmail, right? You know, announcements, no big deal. But they also have workers who can blog and are encouraged to do so to give back to the technological community to – I mean, we talked about this before, your sort of personal brand equity. They're encouraging people to do that because what companies don't realize is if, you know, Matt Cutts, who's a great, you know, Google person,
I was just going to say that.
If he's popular and he has clout on the internet, that clout is automatically added to your company because you hired him,
mm-hmm.
right? And the more, I mean, I'm trying to talk about this at work with people because the more he gets recognized and is known as an expert, the more awesome your company is because mm-hmm. you hired Matt Cutts.
Right.
You are giving him an outlet.
These businesses are afraid the opposite is going to happen. They're going to have somebody that's the opposite of Matt Cutts and provide negative brand image to the company. But I guess if you're monitoring and watching it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like anything else, right? What happens if you do something bad at work? There are real-world consequences for it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just silly that these people freak out about it so much because there's consequences to everything. And why is the web so different to these people with regard how people they think people are going to operate?
Yeah, and I think they're generally good for the company. Mm-hmm. They provide feedback, you know, from the consumer, or customer, or whatever mm-hmm. user,
right? I mean. I always thought about it, you know, like a place like a company, you have all these people doing things very similar to each other. There's, you know, multiple programming groups in a company. I mean, look at Google, right? There's more than one programming group in Google.
Yeah.
Why can't you try and share that information with each other?
Yeah.
Right.
And the more information that's out there, the more searches, results you're going to get for your company. And
yeah.
The more the customer or user is going to understand your service.
Yeah. Right.
Because you have, you know, people talking about it. And,
mm-hmm. so. And even, you know, what you can help and give back to the community looks so much better for your company because it's like, they're helping, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's, I mean, I'm personally kind of like, that people are like, oh my God, the Whiteout has a blog. Like, to me, that seems like I didn't even think twice about that, right?
Yeah. And I think you're right when you're saying like a corporate blog is more of like a PR thing or a press release.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's like, okay, we're releasing this. This is going to be problems. You know, we need feedback about X. So what are we going to do, right? But I think blogs are really useful in the workplace. And I think if you set a culture that is aimed at trying to get people to use things like that and share information, there's a huge problem, I think, right now in the world with people. I mean, we talk about this with programming primarily, but, you know, like I said with frameworks, right, maintainability of code, sharing that information with everyone else. There's so many people out there working right now who basically are working to keep themselves useful in a workplace so that they don't get fired. And that's terrible, right? So it's like, okay, well, I've made this program so obscure and difficult to use and look at that there's no way they can fire me. Because they're screwed without it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Matt Cutts is like an internet celebrity for Google. I mean, he's got job security just because of his blog.
Yeah. But I mean,
but, you know, it's
sharing
also a
information
good
like that, you need to not only externally with the rest of the world, you need to use that internally, right? One thing I'm trying to do is in a place like Montana, microblogging, Twittering, stuff like that is really new. Really, really new. And I think in a place like the University of Montana, Montana State University, it's really important that everybody is trying to let everyone know what they're doing because resources are being wasted all the time by people doing the same thing, right? Or, I mean, how many times, like, why do people love things like conferences and stuff? Because they get to go talk to people and see what they're doing, right? People come back from conferences like, well, I know Billy Joe Bob over in this place is doing this, and now I want to, you know, and it always ends up being a good thing, but why can't we be doing that all the time?
Yeah.
Right.
And especially large corporations that have separated groups that don't get to talk to each other all the time.
Yeah.
Well, they at can least communicate.
At least in a private corporation or even, you know, just a non-government entity like university, you can set strict standards like that. But it's so hard in like higher ed and things like that to get people to do that because it's sharing is something that is so tough to do. Right. In a corporation, departments may compete around each other, but it comes to the point of like, well, if we both screw up, we're out of business, right? It seems like sometimes on a university, you know, or government programs and stuff, it's like, well, we know we're not out of business, you know, so we're just going to do our things. And it's not so much that they're trying to spite other departments. It's just there isn't that push from up top to communicate departmentally. Or like on a university, there's a lot of bad blood between departments. So, or not even bad blood, but just history, right? You know?
So I know you've worked with blogs at the university. Have mm-hmm. you been successful? Were you able to get them implemented?
I mean, they're implemented, but getting people to use them is another thing, right? I mean, I even work in an office with programmers who are really into Web 2.0 stuff, and I can't get them to blog.
Is it maybe because that other people aren't blogging too?
Oh, of course. I mean, it's the second. I mean, honestly, you and I have seen this. I was kind of just in a slump with things. Until I kind of, you know, got back in contact with you since we both graduated and we were kind of talking about the projects we do. And I think we both have really fired each other up about stuff. I mean, I saw your blog and you started telling me the traffic you were getting just for your personal Mark Sandler. And I was like, oh my God, this stuff works, right?
Yeah.
And immediately I just got back into the game trying to do my thing. I mean, when someone else is doing it, it really it helps you and encourages you, you know. But at the same time, it's so hard to be like, well, let's blog about this. And they're like, well, what will we blog about? I mean, and it's funny how writing in general has really kind of taken a lower level in the workplace. Like it used to always be, it used to be
formal,
like
more formal.
Well, just excellent written communication skills was required for every job, right? And it seems like that isn't even the problem, or that doesn't happen as much anymore. That's not as emphasized as it used to be. And it should, because, I mean, you need to be able to communicate and record things accurately and well. I mean, programmers that aren't following good programming practices are killing people everywhere just because it's so much more work, right? And I think being able to let people know and sort of communicate things like that, I think is completely invaluable. But it has to be a culture shift from the top. Like, I'm sorry, like a small fish like Jade Robbins on that university is not going to change people's minds, right? I need Jeff Gamble, the president of the university. I need his blog. I need him to blog. Mm-hmm. But it's never going to happen.
I think maybe you got to show numbers like, hey, Google's blog has this many, much traffic, blah, blah.
I know. It's so funny, this resistance to change in big organizations like that.
I think the larger they are, the harder it is for them to change. Oh, yeah,
exactly. So. And you're like, I mean, you look at like Google, you're like, look at this company. I mean, Google is a rock star, right? And it's like, look what they're doing and look how they're doing it. And it's successful. And you can even give them that, like the world's largest test case of success of this sort of thing. And they're like,
yeah, because they're a tech company. Blah, blah.
I just don't think we can integrate something like that without wasting a bunch of time. And I just want to stab myself in the eye. You're like,
oh. And it's not like you even have to pay for the software, WordPress. You know,
yeah, exactly. Open source software everywhere. You
know, blogging software.
Yeah. Terrible. Wikis.
How about wikis?
Wikis are... Again, completely invaluable because then it's not just like one person saying something. It's really this sort of aggregated, woven data together of everybody.
Right. And I think a lot of businesses keep track of their different systems and how things work and troubleshooting advice and things in probably typically a paper system of some sort.
Yeah.
Whereas a wiki is so much faster. You click a mouse and you're already in another paper. And much better organized.
Here's our ERP retail system manual, 12-volume, three-ring binder of coders' comments. And you're like, oh, are you serious?
Yeah. Or even simple stuff like what kind of ink does this printer take? Or how do I print on the backside? You know, every printer is different. Do you flip it upside down? Do you face it forward? Whatever, you know.
Do you honestly – this let's see if you can catch this. Implementing wikis in a workplace of an organization, do you know what the hardest thing with wikis I tend to have is?
What's that?
Getting people to understand that anybody can edit anything. It is like pulling teeth. Like some people, you're like,
well, I don't want them to do that.
Well, no, it's so funny. No, it's the opposite. It's like, oh, I was reading that wiki article you wrote, and this part was wrong. And you look at them and you're like, so change it. That's what it's for. Right? You know how many times that happens, right? Like,
so I implemented Wiki in our company, and they immediately liked it, and it was faster and easier to use. Mm-hmm. But they didn't really understand the concept of Wiki, like
exactly right.
How to, and especially not the syntax. And
everybody loves it. It's like a super easy to use CMS, right?
Yeah.
You know,
but they wanted me to put all the information.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, no, that's not the whole point. Works, is that right. If I do something wrong, you fix it, or like someone would be like, man, I wish there was a way for like everybody to know how to do this. It's like, well, no, put it on the Wiki. That's what it does.
Yeah, definitely. Large corporations have a tendency to reinvent
the Wiki. Oh yeah, of course. I mean, that's even what's funny is, and then there's certain things like small programs implement their own Wiki, and you're like, okay, like it's like so we use Redmine, which is a project management software. And projects themselves can come with wikis, right? That's cool. But like, if you've been using MediaWiki for a long time, the wiki in Redmine seems really watered down, right? So it's tough to explain to people. Well, because you say wiki and they think Wikipedia, mm-hmm. which is MediaWiki, right? Great program, I think.
Yeah, it's the software you use.
Love it, right? So, I mean, if anything, so, but we use, and it makes sense for us because, like, with MediaWiki, you can't have fine-grained permissions. It really is a wiki for everyone, right? You can only logged in or registered people can edit it, or no one can edit it, or no one can read it. But, like, with Redmine, we can say, okay, these users are in this project, only they can see that wiki.
Nice.
Right? That's pretty simple. But its wiki functionality is super watered down compared to MediaWiki. So, like, we had a really sort of hard push and resistance to change immediately because everybody was like, well, I know how to use Wikipedia and MediaWiki, and I don't want to use this piece of crap wiki because, you know, they need, like, an integration standard.
What right? do you mean by that?
Like, how do I explain this without, like, a way, like, communication protocols between wikis? Right. And MediaWiki's kind of doing that now. Like, there's like Star Trek wikis. There's like, you know, Chevy Corvette wikis, right. You know.
Wiki dot whatever.
Yeah. So, something like, it's, is. You know, so you go to like Wikipedia and you like search and it just searches Wikipedia, but it's like there should be a way to aggregate all those together. Like, let them like crosstalk with each other, right? So, like, if I go to the Star Trek blog and search for like, you know, Chevy block engine carburetor parts, you know, like Star Trek blogs or Star Trek wiki's not going to have that.
No.
But it should be like, hey, but you know what? I did a quick little search over at this other wiki and it's got results.
That's a good thing. That's a good,
you know, that'd be way cool. So, like, let's say for ours, if our wiki could talk to like a big media wiki, right? So if I go to like media wiki and I search for like, you know, configuring LDAP, right? It should be smart enough to look at different wikis, including like one that maybe you know, or like, let's say,
as long as it's not private data.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
flag it somehow.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be cool if I had like a way to talk like that to say. So if I search my local wiki for LDAP configuration, not only do I get the specific LDAP configuration information for this project, but also generic LDAP configuration, you know, from this LDAP wiki or something. You know, that'd be cool.
That is cool. That's a good idea.
Make it.
I think they're probably not focusing on it because they mainly do Wikipedia.com. That's why they made
Wikipedia, yeah, you know. That's true.
That's what they're making it for. So I don't know if they'll ever do that.
Well, and then like Redmine's wiki is just not media wiki at all. That's something that needs to be like a XML data sharing or something. I don't know.
Maybe there is.
Maybe there probably isn't.
Probably, yeah. Well, definitely not what you're talking about with the search capabilities and stuff.
But wikis, I think, in the workplace, but kind of bring it on back to topic, I guess. Wikis are super useful. I mean, it's, you know, wikis, it's just everybody likes a wiki, and it's a good way to save information.
Yep.
I agree. I think I wish more people would use them and more workplaces would use them, especially blogs. I'm kind of a blog freak. I wish more people use those because, I mean, I love things like standard blog features, right? RSS feeds, things like that. I love those. So
yeah, and I think want more. I think they can have a place in the corporate world too.
Yeah. It's just you've got to get in there and you've got to explain it because definitely if you don't explain it to people, when you tell them like, oh, I think we should do a blog, they just freak. So you got to get in there. You got to get a good definition of it and clear people's minds and change them about it.
Yep.
Good stuff. All right. Well, that was the fourth episode of Face Off. I hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next time.